It is my pleasure to be joined by Will Kennedy, voice of the Argos, chopping it up about some UWF fall football camp. Will, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Drew. Good day. It was our media day today, of course. I think day 8 or 9 of practice, so things are rolling along. And the best news, probably of all of it, is they started putting in the seats today over at Finn Air Field out on campus for those home games in the fall. And we've been waiting for that and glad to see it. And hopefully they'll get them all in here with no problems for that first game.
Yeah, they did, and things are looking good. Is there any vibe on campus? Obviously, you're obviously a professor as well. Is there any different buzz that you're feeling maybe with the season approaching, and not just the season approaching, but the fact that all the home games are going to be right on campus at Penn Air Field this year?
It's a big change. I mean, they talked about that a little bit today during media day, but it really is. You know, we loved playing at Blue Wahoo Stadium. It certainly was one of, if not the most unique venues in Division II football, one of the most unique and probably in college football overall, to play football by the bay, you know, in that beautiful stadium. But, I mean, the reality of that is it's a baseball stadium. And so the sight lines were a little weird for football, definitely weird for us up in the broadcast booth. You're behind home plate, like you would call a baseball game. And then, of course, the field set up where, you know, you're moving away from you most of the time, going towards that outfield wall down by the water. So, and then also the seats, you know, along curves away or slants away, obviously, down the third baseline and the first baseline. So the crowd would end up kind of being removed from the action, except unless you were in the one end zone. So this will change that dynamic a little bit. Students, last year we had the one game on campus, that first game against Southwest Baptist. Huge student turnout. They loved it. Their only real thing was, hey, we didn't have enough seats, and it was kind of hard to see, so we're putting in 4,000 seats. I think that really will, you know, change that vibe. And then the other big thing is it's not necessarily during the game. It's a little bit more maybe pregame, you know, the tailgating outside right in front of the field house there. But also now you've got the ability to create your own traditions, you know, to kind of what kind of things do you want to do pregame, and how does that look, and what's the schedule like? And we'll get that opportunity to start doing that now. And that's something that will develop over, you know, seasons to come as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely looking forward to being out there at ESPN Pensacola and being able to experience all the things. As you said, Coach Shinnick talking today, what was maybe one or two things that Coach Shinnick said that kind of caught your eye? Obviously, the whole quarterback competition thing was very interesting, but was there anything else? We'll get to the quarterbacks in a second, that Coach Shinnick said that maybe stood out with how things have gone over the next over the last, you know, 7, 8, 9 days of fall camp?
Well, it's not so much fall camp, although fall camp's part of that process, was that first question that somebody asked him, you know, early on about, you know, getting over that Newberry game last year and that playoff loss. And, you know, Coach told me right after the game, I mean, that, you know, we all felt it. It was just such a disappointment and kind of a gut punch. And, you know, he said, you know, I probably won't look at this film for a while. It'll take me a while to delve into that. So, you know, getting back out there on the field in the spring was a big part of it. Obviously getting fall camp, and now you're actually counting down towards that tangible goal of kicking things off September 3rd. That helps. You know, that helps really laser focus, and you get away from 2021. It's all about 2022 now. So that's a big part of it. And there's so many guys that are back that they want to get that taste out of their mouth and move past that. I think, you know, probably what I've taken away from the first week and some change with camp is speed. The overall level of the team, the speed is faster than I've ever seen it. And that's saying something, because that was a fast group last year, obviously, and back in 2019 as well. And then just the experience level. You've got guys, you lose some, you know, guys that are hoping to make the NFL, guys that are, you know, off trying other things to play professional football. But the level of speed they brought in with some transfers and even the kids out of high school, it's just up to the notch. So that's the big part of it. So you've got, you know, speed on all both sides of the ball, special teams as well. But rightfully so, you know, like you said, everybody's looking at that quarterback position and trying to figure out who's going to replace Austin Reed and what does that look like.
Yeah, so, and Coach had said it originally, and I played some of the audio earlier for our listeners, it was six, or there's six in the room, coming down to three. You've got Byron Jarrett and Michael Rich Jr. taking a majority of the snaps, but also Brett Neesett, who is there, transfer from Arkansas State. All of the guys still involved in the competition. Byron's been taking more of the first team reps. Something I noticed a little bit more of today was that he was in there obviously more often with Shamari Mason, and then Michael was out there a lot more often as well. Do you think there's actually a chance that Coach Shinnick goes with a two quarterback system, or do you think, as he said, that he is, when he commits to a starter, whenever that is going to be the guy, regardless of what happens during the season?
I think we go back to 2019, and we went down the road to Carson Newman, and Austin Reed was not the starter. He was the backup to J.C. Robles, who was a grad transfer from Colorado State and had some experience, started some games out there at Colorado State. So J.C. had won the battle in fall. It had been very close, kind of like what Coach was talking about today. It was, back and forth between guys, he and Austin, leading up to that game. And the offense just didn't click, and it wasn't J.C.'s fault. The offensive line was, bringing some new guys in. They were struggling a little bit. The game plan really wasn't rolling. And you heard Coach say it today, they put Austin in, and they were running Austin. They were running, quarterback sneaks and sweeps, all kinds of things that would turn out later that was not the offense that was fitted, best suited for Austin Reed. And so I think, I don't think Coach Shinnick and Coach Carlton, the offensive coordinator and the staff, they're adverse to playing two quarterbacks. But, your hope is that you've got one guy who steps forward, takes the reins, and puts his stamp on it. You don't have to deal with that. I think there's enough difference between these three guys that you might could play two different guys, because maybe a Byron Jarrett gives you a little more athleticism and running ability.
Yeah.
And, Michael Rich or Brett Neesat's a pocket passer. Brett's a big kid. He's from Saraland, just across the state line, played at Arkansas State, as you mentioned. He was here in the spring coming off a knee injury. He was here all last year, but he didn't play, obviously, with a knee injury. So he had the spring to kind of learn the offense. Mike Rich and Byron Jarrett have come in, and they've picked things up very quickly. And we call Byron Jarrett, his nickname is Pee Wee, so you're going to love that because he's a big kid.
All right, yeah.
But he was here all summer, and you heard Dave Durden talk about it today. The receivers came in. Byron came in, some of the other quarterbacks came in, and they worked and they threw on their own time. And so it's not like this is the first time when fall camp started that, they've been together. So there's a lot of cohesion between that group. And we saw it in 2018. I mean, we ended up playing six quarterbacks that season because of injuries and just bad luck and things that didn't go our way. So you can't have too much talent in that room, regardless of who starts. And we saw that in 2019 too. Austin Reed was not the starter from day one, but he was the starter and game 15, and that was the national championship game.
Yeah, that was one of the questions that I asked David, is just, coming in and you've got the quarterback competition, how has David and also the other wide receivers approached this? Because obviously you're focused on what you're trying to do as a wide receiver group and get better, but also that chemistry can be something that's very important. And he had mentioned, even off the field stuff with all three of the guys, just trying to build some sort of camaraderie that, while they're on the field, it's a competition and they're focused on football. Off the field, studying film a little bit extra. Here's some things that maybe we all could work on as a group together. Staying afterwards, to work on certain routes or something like that, all can help these quarterbacks. If you were picking the starting quarterback, Will, put you in Coach Shinnick's seat here, have you seen enough to say that one guy has been better than the other, or do you think it's a relatively even battle between particularly Byron and Mike, but even Brett as well?
Yeah, I think, I think you're seeing the fact that I think Byron Jarrett gives a little bit more multifaceted game. That he's got a rocket for an arm, but Brett and Mike can throw the ball too. As can Corey Wilshire. There's some other guys in that room that can throw it. But, physicality, the ability to run, that's where Byron separates himself. And, in this conference, in the GSC especially, we see that. We've seen that from, other quarterbacks that have done that to us, and that changes the dynamic. Not that Austin Reed couldn't run. He liked to run. He fancied himself a runner. He ran for a couple touchdowns, including a long one, I think, against was that Valdosta. He got loose and ran one, from about 40 yards out. He was able to do it. With Byron, it's more of a – it could be, you design plays for him to run. But when the pocket breaks down, he's not just looking to scramble and pick up a few yards. He's looking to bust a big play. And that adds a dimension to the offense. And all of a sudden that makes David Durden and Larry Rembert and Caden Leggett, and we could go on and on with the receivers, more dangerous. And so maybe a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. And you hear those receivers talking about it, kind of what they're saying too is, there may be more plays where Byron Jarrett's athletic ability extends the play, and you run a route, and now you got to run something else, and now you got to stay in the play and get downfield and create an opportunity for Byron to get the ball to you if you can stay away from the defense. So I think Byron Jarrett makes it very difficult for other defenses, but I think that's what I think you're hearing is they like the depth in this room. And, you know, if something happened, if there's an injury, or even if, you know, if Byron struggled a little bit, you can go to a Mike Richards, you can go to Brett Neisett, they're going to step in and be able to make this offense sing. And that's what you want going into the season. But I would say right now, you know, just the fact, like you've seen it, Drew, at practice, and you hear Coach say it, the guy who's getting more first-team reps is usually that guy that's in the lead dog position as we get closer to the start of the season. Now, scrimmages can change that. You know, you go out and have a good scrimmage or a bad scrimmage, you can flip yourself on that depth chart and on the board a little bit.
Most definitely. What would you say, outside of the quarterback competition or quarterback decision on who's going to be the starter, is the biggest question with this football team? Is it something on the defense, the offense? What would you say is the biggest question mark going into their first scrimmage coming up on Friday and then going into the Fan Day scrimmage next week?
You got a big – not a question, because I think the talent is there. You've got to figure out who the left tackle is going to be. And that's a key position at any level of football, obviously. But Jacob Bruce is all-conference, was, you know, all-conference last year at right tackle. The beginning of last year, they were going to flip Jacob over to left tackle because we had lost Sam Antoine, had been All-American at left tackle. And you thought, naturally, it's like, okay, well, this kid's played right tackle. He's been great over there. He's got the size and the frame, and let's move him over to left. It just didn't work out. Jacob just didn't – he wasn't comfortable at left tackle. So they're going to leave Jacob at right again this season because he plays so dynamically there. So you got to kind of figure out who's that left tackle going to be. There's a couple different guys, some guys that are back that had a little bit of experience last year playing that position, and then you've got some new guys in. One, a kid named Desmond Bland, who was coming off knee injury and was out all last year, transferred in. I believe it was Nebraska where he originally went to play. And so he's fought through some injuries, but he's impressive physically, and he's got to get his football rhythm back. He hasn't played in about 2 years. So, you know, who's going to step up at left tackle? There's a guard position, but they've got some experience that can slide in there and play. So, you know, looking and you'd say we got three all-conference preseason picks on the offensive line, but there's two positions, a guard and tackle, that you've got to still fill. So that's a little bit of a question mark, and just who's going to rise to the top, what, you know, there. And then I would say, you know, defensively, you lose Matt Gotell across the front. You lost three guys who play on that defensive front regularly, and you've got some depth there. You've got some guys that are getting bigger and stronger, and you've got some guys that have transferred in, but we haven't seen them play yet. So probably across both sides in the trenches, because that's so vital. You know, at the level of football UWF is playing and wants to play, and you get into the playoffs. We saw it last year, Drew. You know, McNeese playing over McNeese, it was like 115 on the field. It's going to be hot here, you know, for the first home game, first couple weeks. You've got to have depth. You've got to have a bunch of guys that can play through. And then that benefits you down the road in the season. So this team's built that way. I think the questions are kind of like a couple positions, who's going to be the starter. But once the lights are on and the games are for real, it'll all settle itself. I mean, they're deep at receiver. They're deep at running back. They've got some depth in the DBs, you know, the defensive backs that they haven't had in a while. But, you know, do they have a safety like DeAnthony Bell, you know, who's making a name for himself for the Cleveland Browns right now? Is there that physical presence in the defensive backfield to step up and deliver those big hits? Or will that be a linebacker now? So lots of talent, but talent is talent until it goes out there and proves it right on the field. And so I think we'll all kind of still have a couple questions till that first kickoff in that first game.
Yeah, most definitely. Again, speaking with Will Kennedy, voice of the Argos, a couple more questions for you. What are you most looking forward to as the voice of the Argos to see this year, whether it be at Penner Field or whether it be traveling on the road as well? The thing that you anticipate most for this season, Will?
It really is. Especially, having a new quarterback, you know, having really 3 years of Austin Reed, even though we didn't play in 2020, you know, it's been three seasons since there's been a new quarterback. And, it was all Austin pretty much, other than mop-up time last year and through that championship run, it was pretty much all Austin. So, who's going to step in and be the next quarterback and a string of great quarterbacks for this program? And then, you know, can a guy like Dave Durden, for example, who spoke today, who is on the small school Senior Bowl watch list, is a kid that played Division One. He was in the minor league system for the Boston Red Sox for a year before he went back to college football. Super talented, you know, all the physical attributes in the world. Can he stay healthy? Can, you know, we saw flashes of it last year, but he missed some games. Can he be there the whole season? And if he is, you know, what kind of numbers is he going to put up? And Shamari Mason, I don't think, Drew, we've seen even the full range of what Show can do. He runs the football. He can catch it. They really haven't, up until now, designed much in the way of passing game offense around Shamari. But if you'll come out to practice and watch, you will see occasionally, Shamari slide out a little bit. You know, might he play out of the slot as a receiver at times? Or can they get them the ball in the screen game? You want to get the ball to the playmakers, the Dave Durden, Shamari Masons, the Ravions, Larry Rembert, all these guys in the open field, let them go to work. That's what I'm excited to see, because, it's big play capability. We've seen these guys, and that's fun to call from up in the booth, obviously, when you break a big one, when Durden caught that bomb against McNeese to get things going, and big plays and the one-handed catch he had at home, and those kind of things. Those are the fun things. But then too, for me, it is just kind of seeing how does this team come back. All the hype going into last year, number one in the country, defending national champs, and they pretty much lived up to it most of the season, and had a disappointing end. This year they're going to be ranked. They are ranked 11th in the poll. One of the polls that's out. They're considered now that that kind of program. They're going to be ranked around the top 10 every season, as long as they've got the talent. I think as long as Pete Shinnick's there, they're going to have that talent. So to me, that's always the fun thing, is like, okay, we know what's here. Can they live up to that? Can they produce on the field?
Yeah, and of course, the expectation is there. The hope is there. How much do you think – there's all these other things going on in college football. How much do you think Coach Shinnick or the coaching staff actually pay attention to these changes? Like, obviously, NIL, they have paid some attention to that, and coaches addressed questions like that before, but even this realignment stuff, and obviously, all of the scheduling things, how much of what's gone on this offseason with all the changes in college football do you think the coaching staff takes into mind, or are they just focused more on their program? Obviously, they have to be, but how much of the outside noise do you think they factor into, not decisions they make, but just some of the things that go on in the world of college football?
I think it's interesting for every level of college football, and super so here at this level, is the transfer portal. And, this is it giveth and it taketh away. Obviously Austin Reed, with 2 years of eligibility left, decided, hey, I want to try it. I went to a D1 at Southern Illinois, didn't like it, came here, won a national championship, but I want to see if I can prove to myself that I can play up there. So he goes to Western Kentucky. But then you get, you've got guys from Southern Miss and South Alabama and Florida State and other places that have transferred into us. So, those coaches, our coaching staff is great at this, Drew. They are checking that transfer portal, all the time. And, just to see what's there. And you have to. It's a different world now. You've got to be looking in that portal all the time. You don't want to miss something. You certainly don't want to have somebody, land at one of your competitors in the conference, especially that you could have bought in and it could have made your program stronger. That's a big part of it. Yeah, NIL a little bit different at this level, although we've had a couple guys that have done their things, and that's great. Gives them some opportunities for exposure and maybe to make a few dollars here and there. But the one you did touch on, I think, and Pete Shinnick will tell you, he's been around football a long time, that the whole what happens at the top of college football with conference realignment and all this stuff, it's going to have a trickle down impact. And so who knows in the next, I'm talking a short window. I'm not talking about 10 years from now, 15, 20. I'm talking about in the next 3 to 4 years, it may change. The distinctions between Division I and II may go away and it may look a little bit differently. But the truth of the matter is, you take a school like McNeese that we played last year, or Southern Miss, or even a South Alabama, our enrollment, as far as the number of students, is as big as any of those places, and bigger in some cases. It's about facilities. It's about other things.
Yeah.
And, can those barriers get removed a little bit? Can we knock some of that down? It would help us tremendously. It's very hard to schedule. We're the only D2, I think, or there's two of them now, but, in the state of Florida, there's nobody near us in Florida. So it's tough to find opponents nearby outside of conference opponents. Nobody wants to play us. We thought we had a game on the road against an FCS school in the third week of the season, and they backed out on us, and they're actually playing. This particular school is now playing Warner, who we're opening with, so they chose to play an NAIA opponent instead of us. And that's the world we live in, so it makes it hard to get your game.
Yeah.
I think if that landscape kind of changed, that would make it a lot easier. And then we could play a Southern Miss and a McNeese and Nicholls State. And there's all these schools kind of along the Gulf Coast that would be options for us if it wasn't for this. Well, we're Division I and you're Division II. And, a lot of fans may not realize this. Beating McNeese last year did nothing for us.
I mean, other than beating them and saying, hey, we beat a Division I, it did not help us in any of the Division II rankings. It did not help us when it came to playoff seeding. We got nothing for that. So
it's crazy.
Those are the weird quirks of playing Division II football.
Yeah, again, craziness right there. I can't wait to see what happens here over the next, you know, as you said, Will, 3 or 4 years with UWF or just Division II and how the lines could be blurred with the FCS and all these other things. But, Will, appreciate the time as always. You have a good one. I might see you out there at the field tomorrow, planning on being there for practice, and we're going to have our conversations every single week. Looking forward to those. You have a good rest of your night.
Yes. Interested. I mean, practices are open. Now, right now they're in the mornings. It's kind of tough, but we will have, you know, fan night coming up here. I think that's a Friday night, the 25th, I think it is. Check GoArgos.com to make sure. I'm not looking at it right now, but we'll have that kind of, you know, scrimmage fan night when people can come out and kind of see the seats in. Hopefully they'll be almost done at that point. Kind of get a look at how it's going to look for the season and kind of watch these guys before we get down to that September 3rd first game.
Again, he's Will Kennedy, voice of the Argos. Appreciate the time, Will.
Anytime, man.